Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Fahima Vorgetz. Fahima Vorgetz works with the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, and she's the former head of a literacy program for women in Kabul. She's presently living in Washington, D.C., where she continues to speak out against the oppression of Afghan women, and she's involved in fundraising for Afghan refugees. And we're just squeezing in this this interview. Fahima is here in the San Francisco Bay Area because she and a few other people are doing a teach-in tomorrow about the situation of Afghanistan, with an emphasis on what's happening with Afghan women. And I'm really happy to be able to interview you, Fahima, because I don't know as much as I would like to about this subject, and I would imagine I'm not alone. So let's start out by hearing what your organization, the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, that's it's very intense title there, Revolutionary Association. I mean, I'm all for revolutionary. It's just really interesting to me that that's a title. But what does this organization do exactly? And, you know, talk about the issues and some background, if you would. I just want to say that I don't know if a lot of people have seen that email that goes around asking. It's been around and around and around on the internet talking about the situation of Afghan women. So I know it's really incredibly difficult, but that's what I know. So anything else you fill in will be very welcome knowledge.
Thank you very much, Sue, for inviting me. And thank you for giving me the time to talk about the women's situation in Afghanistan. As you probably know, the people in this country don't know very much about the women's situation in Afghanistan, and that will give me opportunity to speak a little bit about the Afghanistan and about the women's situation that will inform people some. You ask about the revolutionary word. Yes, it is a difference between this country and Afghanistan, of course. The revolutionary here would probably mean in this country they associate it with communism or affiliated with communism, but in Afghanistan, any change will appear in the women's situation that will be revolutionary. The Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan was formed in 1977 by the founder of the group. Her name was Mina, and she was a very progressive, active, dedicated woman who later was assassinated by the right wing and the KGB agents. The organization has been working underground. First, they were working against the Soviet occupation, and now they are working very hard against the fundamentalist extremist group, which is called Jihadis and Taliban.
This is fundamentalist, Muslim fundamentalist.
Yes, they are fundamentalist Muslims. the 92 when the Soviet-backed government was out of Afghanistan, the so-called freedom fighters, they are called also Mujahideen, they came to power, and their first attack was on women. And in 96, when the Taliban came to power, their first attack was against on women. Again, was on women. And the RAWA, or Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan, is the only group inside of Afghanistan who is fighting these fundamentalists and working for women's rights and working with the refugees and for the refugees in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the issues that that you deal with? I mean, when you talk about, we talk about the oppression of women. We were saying earlier, coming over here in the car, about they think, you know, most people probably think it's another Muslim country that's Muslims are always oppressive to women. And I know there's a huge variation in countries that are Muslim, and that's a stereotype. It's not necessarily always true. So, having said that, do talk about how it is specifically for women with the Taliban in power in Afghanistan.
Let me tell you a little bit about the Afghanistan situation before the Taliban or the fundamentalist extremists came to power. For the first time in the early 50s, the Afghan women were given the choice to wear a burqa or a veil or not. They were going to school, and they were working outside of the house, and they were making money, and they were gaining freedom and rights little by little, gradually. Probably Afghanistan was not heaven for women as far as the women's right is concerned, but it was getting better and better every day. And in 65, for the first time, Afghan women had the right to vote. In 65, we had the women in parliament in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. In the late 60s, we had women in cabinet in Afghanistan, and also in the Senate, we had women. We had educated women as principal, doctors, engineer, or different kind of professional. In the late 70s to until the beginning of 90s, we were more. We had more educated women than men, in, especially in Kabul, in the cities. And there were universities, more than 50% of the students in universities were women. Mm-hmm. And, of course, teachers were a lot of teachers, women. I am 46 years old, and I went to school in Kabul and went to college, and I have a degree in chemistry. But my sister, who's 16 years old, younger than me, she couldn't go to school. She couldn't finish medical school that she was in the third year when the Taliban came to power. This is the difference between Afghanistan then and Afghanistan now. The women's situation in Afghanistan is so that women cannot get out of their house. There is no school for girls. Women cannot work. They cannot leave the house unless they are accompanied by a male close relative, which is either father, son, husband, or brother. If they see a woman outside of the house, they beat them up, they put them in jail, or they even execute them. The women cannot wear high heel, they cannot wear white socks. There is a dress code for women that if the women don't obey it, or don't do what the Taliban says, they are punished severely. Women are stoned to death there in Afghanistan. There is no health care for women in Afghanistan because male doctors are not allowed to examine female patients, and female doctors are not allowed to work. When the Soviet invaded Afghanistan, men went to war, and a lot of women were the sole breadwinner for the family. And we have a lot of widows in Kabul over the 20 years of war, and they were the only breadwinner for the family. And now that the women cannot work, the professional women cannot work, the people are facing starvation. The children are dying because the only breadwinner in the family is not allowed to work or cannot get out of the house. Because of the Taliban oppression, the suicide rate among women is the highest. It is poverty is the highest in Afghanistan. And also the psychiatric problems among women is also very high in Afghanistan. Mm. This is the situation, the women's situation in Afghanistan.
Wow. Well, I can see where it's really majorly awful. Yeah, they're basically prisoners. I mean, in a total bind. There's no way to go, seems like, sounds like. And what is the rationale of the Taliban, which you say controls 90% of the country? Mm-hmm. So it's the official government, 90% of the country, and they got in power how? By fighting? I mean, did they have a lot of popular support?
No, they don't have the support of the people. What happened when the Soviet invaded Afghanistan, the Western country, including the U.S., of course, the most, they poured money into Afghanistan, gave military support there to the so-called freedom fighter, or Mujahideen, and they opened a lot of religious madrasas in Pakistan, and they trained these young kids who were ready to hate somebody. They were at the age of like teenagers who love to hate somebody. They trained them and gave them guns and they gave them money and they told them to go and fight the infidel and atheist, the Soviet. And the war was going on and they were uneducated, uncivilized kids who later they grew up. When the Soviet was gone, when in 1989, when the Soviet was defeated, and by the way, we Afghans always think and we believe that the U.S. is enjoying being the only superpower because of Afghans, because of our bloodshed. And now that when the Soviet was gone, the U.S. and all the Western countries, they turned their back against our people and left our country to some bandit and uncivilized and uneducated people who had guns and they only knew how to use guns. And they turned their guns against our own people. They came to power and they did from raping to burning houses to any atrocity in possible. They have done it. Later, from 92 to 96, the situation in Afghanistan was a civil war. There were rocket attacks. There were house burning. There were acid spilling on people, on women especially. And like I said, the atrocity was so barbaric, was so bad that the people were just so fed up with the Mujahideen group. Among them, the Taliban, which were also raised and trained in those religious madrasas, which was paid by the U.S. tax dollar money and the Saudis and other Western countries, they slowly gained power there and they came with the notion of bringing justice and peace to Afghanistan. Because people were so fed up with the Mujahideen's treatment of civilian that they thought, okay, if they can bring us peace and justice, we just don't want the Mujahideen group anymore. We'll support them. And that's how the Taliban came to power. The first thing they did, they disarmed people. They came to power and they started their first attack on women. They ordered women to stay home and they cannot get out of the house. And since then, since 1996, like, you know, gradually they issued decrees which oppress women more and more. even recently, they issued, just like a couple of weeks ago, they issued a decree that not allow any woman to go to recreation centers or parks or anything. Women are not allowed to go there, to be outside, even if she is accompanied by a male relative. Still cannot do that.
So they're imprisoned in their house, just totally imprisoned in their houses, women are.
Yes, they are. They are. The whole country is taken hostage by the few thousand bandits. Uh-huh. And also the Pakistani and some other Arab countries, terrorists are with them. They all are fighting against our own people. When the Soviet invaded Afghanistan, one of the things that the U.S. and the Pakistan and other countries did, they brought kids from all over the Muslim world to fight the Soviet. They brought them to Afghanistan and they trained them in Afghanistan soil, in Pakistan soil, trained them against the Soviet, against the infidel and atheist. And then later, some of these kids went, they of course, 10 years of war, they grew up and they went back to their countries. When the Soviet was gone, there was nothing for them to do there. They went back to their country, to Algeria, Sudan, Philippines, and all these other countries, and they started the same thing there. If you hear about terrorism in Algeria, terrorism in Sudan, these terrorists were supported and they were funded by the U.S. dollar in Afghanistan soil, in Pakistan soil, against the Soviet.
Terrorists?
It sounded like tourists, but I didn't think that could be terrorists. Wow, and so the United States is basically, yet again, behind, if you look a little, just even a little bit deeply, not too much, is behind this situation of basically this incredible oppression of people. How is it for the average Afghan man who's not involved in the Taliban?
Even for the men, the situation is not good. Men are not allowed to do like different sports. For example, kite flying is forbidden, clapping is forbidden, singing, there is no music there, picture is forbidden. Men have to wear long beard. They cannot, recently, just like a couple of weeks ago, they issued a decree that men have to wear a black turban and they are not allowed to wear a necktie. Men's situation is not very good either. They're also prisoner of the Taliban.
Mm-hmm. So the United States, I want to let people know that my guest is Fahima Vorgets, and she works with the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, and she is herself from Afghanistan. And so the whole country is just totally controlled, and this was encouraged by the United States, really set up by collecting people, not just even people from any people to fight, but people who were already in Muslims and had some feelings about things.
Exactly. The U.S. is calling on the Taliban to hand out Osama bin Laden to them. And apparently this is the only problem that U.S. have with Afghanistan, with the Taliban. But Osama was the one who he was the ally of U.S., against the Soviet, and U.S. funded him, and U.S. helped him. And, of course, Osama helped the U.S. Now that he's a terrorist, he was a terrorist before. When the U.S. sent him to fight against our people, he was a terrorist, and he's still a terrorist. But this shouldn't be the only issue for the U.S.
He's the head of the Taliban, the head of the government?
No, he's not the head of the Taliban. He's a Saudi's terrorist who U.S. Have a suspicion that he may be behind the Tanzania and Kenya bombing of the U.S. embassies. He is hiding now in Afghanistan, and he has his own group called Al-Qaeda or some others. This is a terrorist group that he is in the CIA Most Wanted 10 most wanted, but he was working with the CIA together when the Soviet invaded Afghanistan.
So they were pleased with him before, but now they're not, which, of course, there are many other examples of this type of thing. So, and you say, yeah, Noriega for sure. And you say that the United States is a superpower because of the situation of Afghanistan. Would you say just a little bit more about that?
What we believe that we Afghan fought the Soviet, and we defeated the Soviet. And the reason the U.S. is the only superpower is because we Afghan defeated the Soviet, and that was the other superpower, which is no longer there. And we think because we gave this enjoyment to the U.S., now it is the U.S. turn to help our people. We help them. Now we want them to help our people.
So has there been any change in policy since Bush is the so-called president?
There is, we don't see any change in policy toward Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a forgotten tragedy. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to touch the issue of Afghanistan. And it is forgotten. We just feel like our people were used against the Soviet. The war was against the war was between the Soviet and the U.S. and our people were used. Our blood was used, and just because as soon as they reached that goal, our people are forgotten. They do not do anything about Afghanistan. A few years ago, the UNICOL was trying to open a pipeline from the former Southern Soviet Union through Afghanistan to Pakistan.
Oil. This is an oil pipeline.
UNICOL is oil, company. And the U.S. was very government of the U.S. was very supportive of that. Of course, the different feminist groups they opposed that, and they put so much pressure on the U.S. government that the UNICOL withdraw that project. But since then, the U.S. did some humanitarian help, like $43 million a couple months ago. But in the 80s, in 9.5 years or 10 years, U.S. spent over $3 billion, that is with B, on Afghanistan, giving military help to Afghanistan. And what is $43 million for a country which is the infrastructure is gone in 20 years of civil war and the country is torn apart? What is $43 million? We do appreciate the help of the U.S., of course, but it is time for the U.S. to do some more.
Wow. Well, what is happening in terms of, I mean, obviously it'd be a little bit hard to build any kind of a resistance movement when you can't even move or dress how you want. Is there any resistance movement in Afghanistan? And you talk about refugee camps, and I know that you help raise money, Fahima of Orchids, for refugee camps. So say a little bit about that. We don't have too much time left. So,
Unfortunately, the resistance group is also the Mujahideen group, which were in power. The Afghan people do not support them either. And we would like the U.S. and other countries not to support them. The Russian in Iran and India are sending military weapon to the resistance group. And, of course, the Pakistan and Saudi and other countries are sending to the Taliban. The more weapon they send to Afghanistan, the more blood would be shed. And sometimes they have to stop that. What the U.S. can do, the U.S. can put pressure on their and on her allies, which is Pakistan and Saudi, not to send weapon to Afghanistan, and also on Russian, Iran, and India, not to send any weapon to Afghanistan, and also the CIA brought these monsters, these vampire to power. The CIA should help us to get rid of them too. Mm-hmm. As far as the refugees are concerned, there are different organizations who are working for the refugees and helping them. One is RAWA, of course. They are doing extensively hard work there with the refugees.
Where are the refugees?
The refugees in Pakistan, especially. The RAWA is working with them. And there are also other organizations who are helping in Tajikistan and other areas, which I'm also helping with the other organizations too. And doing fundraising for RAWA and helping RAWA. If people want to help, they can log on to rawa.org. Or also, African Women Mission is a group which is based in California. They're also working with RAWA together. They can send them donation or help and just be part of this movement, part of this struggle that we are facing today.
Mm-hmm. And I want to remind people that RAWA stands for the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan. So it's spelled RAWA, and the webpage is rawa.org, rawa.org. Have you been traveling around, speaking, giving teach-ins around the United States
here? Yes, I do. I go to New York sometimes, and I do in D.C. in some universities. And also, I was speaking at the torture abolition, which was sponsored by Amnesty International and the U.N. in front of the White House. And I was here a couple months ago in L.A., and was speaking. Yes, I do that, and I would like to do even more to raise awarenesses, to let people know what's going on in Afghanistan, and I would like to remind people we Afghan need their help, and we worked for freedom and democracy, we fought for it, and we would like to fight it further, and we would like people to join us in this fight and in the struggle.
I'm curious if people are joining up more with the Taliban in Afghanistan. I mean, you said there were these young men that were trained some years ago. Are more people joining up? Is it growing at all, or is it shrinking? I mean, they're going to get old.
No, they are not joining with the Taliban. People are fed up with the Taliban. How would people join the Taliban if they're starving, if their kids are dying in front of them? They won't. But 22 years of war brought so much poverty, brought so much misery in Afghanistan that people have no energy to do anything anymore. And they don't have the money, they don't have the means, they don't have anything. They would like to fight, but how can they fight? It is a very difficult situation. It is, if you go to Rawa's page and read some stories there about the situation in Afghanistan, you would be appalled by the international abandonment of the people of Afghanistan. It is really it's a disaster. It's a tragedy in Afghanistan. People have no energy to do anything because they don't have anything to fight with.
Well, it's really incredible, and I'm glad that you're telling people about it. And, of course, as Americans, we can always, or as whoever, we can write to and pressure our own governments to take a stand about this. So I want to thank you very much, Fahima Vorgets, from the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan. Thank you very much for your time here, and I just wish for very good things to happen. And again, the webpage is www.rawa.org.
Thank you very much, Sue.
My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.